Back up top, shot through traffic, save made. Follow-up try, that one hits a body in front, and a score! It's a score! It's a score! And the Ice Bears have a 4-3 lead with 30 seconds remaining in the hockey game. Oh, what a hit! Welcome to the SPHL in Knoxville! Comes in on the right side, through the right circle, taking it and fed across, they score! Oh, yes! And the Ice Bears win 3-2 in overtime!
Evansville with it, Yushkevich on the back offense. Around the net, Yushkevich, now Avenir side. Turns to the front, they score! They score! Matt Hobbs has done it! Matt Hobbs has done it! The Thunderbolts eclipse the Bulls! They win it in three! Matt Hobbs against his former team has done it! The Bolts are moving on to round two for the first time in their history! A 14-year wait for Evansville is over!
Welcome to the Knoxville Ice Bears podcast. I'm Joel Silverberg. Appreciate you taking the time to listen to the Knoxville Ice Bears podcast, whether you're doing so on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the KIP podcast. That is the voice of the Evansville Thunderbolts, Tommy Pecoraro, on the call of the game-winning, series-winning overtime goal as Matt Hobbs delivered the knockout punch for the Thunderbolts, their first playoff series win in franchise history since joining the SPHL and defeating the top seed Birmingham Bulls in the first round game three at the Pelham Civic Complex. And you can hear the elation on Tommy's voice as Evansville has been waiting for quite some time for that one. So the Thunderbolts are moving on to the semifinals for the first time. What a first round we had across the board when you look at the overall product that we had in each of the four series. Three of the four series featured at least one overtime game. One series had two overtime games and three one-goal games all in all. One series had a late come-from-behind victory that ultimately saved the season for the defending champs. We'll discuss all of it as we recap a wild first round and set the table for the semifinals, but we're going to start with that call that we just heard from Tommy Pecoraro, Matt Hobbs against his former team, the Evansville Thunderbolts winning 4-3 over the Birmingham Bulls in a back-and-forth game. Evansville scored early. Birmingham was able to draw even. Evansville took a huge momentum boost late in the second period. Birmingham was able to draw even again, and then with less than 5 minutes to go, Evansville took the lead, then took a penalty. Drake Glover scored his second goal of the night, his fourth of the series, with about 3.5 left to go to tie the game at the Pelham Civic Complex, force overtime, but Matthew Hobbs off a great pass by Miles Abbott, didn't really have a whole lot of room to work with in trying to slide that puck behind Joe Kolatarsi in front of Hayden Stewart. Hobbs is able to get the puck on net and send the Evansville bench and Tommy Pecoraro into a bit of a frenzy. And now the Thunderbolts return home, getting ready to host longtime rival Peoria in their first semifinal appearance in the President's Cup playoffs. So recapping the series as a whole, Evansville falls 5-4 in game one on Wednesday night at the Pelham Civic Complex. And that was a game where you really felt like Evansville might have lost the series with it to a degree, because it was a rare off night for Hayden Stewart, gave up four goals, and you're thinking, man, like how often are you going to get an off night from Hayden Stewart, especially since Birmingham really dominated the stretch of play. They outshot Evansville 34-19, including 14-3 in the second period alone. Evansville had only 8 shots on goal through the first 40 minutes and yet found themselves only down 3-2. They scored early in the third, gave up 2 goals about 32 seconds apart later on in the third period, got one back late that ultimately proved inconsequential but made for an exciting final 40 seconds, and ultimately led to Birmingham winning 5-4 in game one. There was a bit of attrition, though, for Birmingham. Carson Rose was ejected during the second period of that game for obscene language or gesture. He was given a 1-game suspension. So when the series shifted back to the Ford Center in Indiana, Carson Rose, Birmingham's leading scorer, was unavailable. Birmingham had a 1-0 lead early in the game. They were unable to get anything else past Cole Ceci. Now, the shots on goal were a little bit more even. Birmingham outshot Evansville 35-32, outshot them only by one shot throughout all of regulation. Mark Zhukov tied the game in the second, and then Chase Ruddy scored halfway through overtime after there was no scoring in the third period that allowed Evansville to stay alive. And then, of course, we had the events happen when the series went back to Pelham for the Bulls to try to close it out at home. And so Rose did return to the lineup, and Drake Glover had a great series. Nikita Kozarev had a great series. But Evansville, just as they did with the Bulls throughout the course of the regular season, they hung around. Cole Ceci kept them in games. They were bend, don't break at times. And suddenly, when it was all on the line, Matthew Hobbs delivers this huge knockout punch, and Birmingham's phenomenal season comes to an end. And I really didn't think Birmingham played a bad series. I thought Evansville hung in tough. I thought Birmingham did a lot of good things. And sure, maybe they missed out on some opportunities. They're obviously going to spend the offseason thinking about what could have been. You have two chances in overtime, one goal. You're one of the highest scoring teams in the league. You're one goal away from, you know, moving on. You had a second period lead in game two and ultimately couldn't shut it down, couldn't lock it down in the final two games. And Evansville is moving on to the semifinals. And Birmingham, after losing in the finals last season, brought 11 guys back from last year's runner-up team, had a really strong squad this year. And on top of that, they added two all-SPHL caliber players in Nikita Kozarev and Drake Glover. They added good depth pieces like McGregor Sinclair, and this looked like a really solid team. I thought at the beginning of the season this was going to be a top-two team. That proved to be the case in the regular season, but as we know how it goes in the playoffs, you have two bad games and your season's over. And so, you know, I don't think it takes a... Well, obviously, it's a very disappointing finish. It's a great season for Birmingham with a disappointing finish. I think the organization would say, yeah, we should have gone farther. We, you know, had the team to go farther, and you know, this does happen. It has happened in this league, and I don't want to say that it takes away from everything that Birmingham accomplished. They had a lot of players. They had great individual seasons. They, as a team, they did a lot of really good things this year. They were very entertaining to watch, and I think they have a lot to be proud of, but obviously they would have traded a lot of the regular season accolades that are probably coming their way in exchange to be playing this week. And that's just the nature of playoff hockey at any level, especially professionally. But in this league, we have seen it time and time again where it all comes down to one weekend, and it's unfortunate for Birmingham, but Evansville played a tremendous series, and it's not just Cole Ceci. They had a number of guys contribute offensively. They had guys making plays in the back end, and was ultimately a good team effort for the Thunderbolts. And, you know, now for the second time in his coaching career in the SPHL, Jeff Bess has won a playoff series. He was with the Fayetteville Fire Ants when they defeated Knoxville in a first-round series back in 2016. So Jeff Bess, who's been in the SPHL for quite some time for a couple of different franchises, now getting his first playoff series win as the head coach of the Evansville Thunderbolts. So, you know, for Birmingham, it's obviously about, you know, what pieces are going to be staying, who's going to be moving on, what does this team look like a year from now, and how do you kind of regroup after what I'm sure is a really, really tough pill to swallow after being so close on two separate occasions and being unable to ultimately move on and move past Evansville. And for the Thunderbolts, obviously you have to be really excited just about the how spread out the offensive distribution was. And I think the way that guys fought, they, you know, there's a ton of confidence oozing now for Evansville. And I think part of it, you know, and I'm sure any team going into the playoffs would say, hey, you have one good weekend, we can be moving on. But for Evansville, particularly against Birmingham, we talked about this on last week's episode, that was going to be a tough matchup for Birmingham just because of how the regular season games between these two teams looked. But Evansville had to be feeling confident specifically against Birmingham. Now that you've gone on, you've knocked off the number one seed, they're just oozing with confidence in that room right now. And Peoria presents a bunch of new challenges. Defensively, the Rivermen are a really good squad. They also have great goaltending with Nick Latinovich, and they've got really good scoring depth. And they can get it from the front end and on the blue line. So it's going to be a different type of challenge and a different type of chess match for Jeff Bess and his squad to put up against with Jean-Guy Trudel and the Rivermen and everything that they have to offer in that lineup. So it's going to be very tough for Evansville, but I think definitely a lot of confidence coming out of that squad up at the Ford Center right now. So they will get that series started Wednesday night. Evansville will host game one. Games two and three will be at Peoria if necessary. The Rivermen used to that format already. They went to Pensacola first, won game one in overtime, and then took game two back on home ice to complete the sweep. So congrats to Evansville and Birmingham. Hats off on a really phenomenal season. And you know, obviously a lot to be proud of. And while I think every team would rather win the President's Cup rather than just the William B. Coffey Trophy, if you can only win one or the other, it really was, I think, a great season. I always had a lot of fun watching that team play. Thought it was a highly entertaining group of guys. They had good goaltending, good defense, good offensive scoring. They were balanced. They move really well around the perimeter. And I think it really goes to show how well Evansville played. I thought it was a very good series. I'm not looking at it like, man, Birmingham choked or Birmingham just didn't play well. I thought at the end of the day, you had two really good teams that gave us three really good games, and Evansville just happened to come out on top in two of them. And if this was a best of seven game series, who knows what would happen. I think we'd continue to get good hockey, but hats off to both teams on a great series, and we'll see what Evansville does against Peoria in the semifinals. So let's move on to that 2-7 matchup, Peoria and Pensacola in game one. How tough was that for Pensacola? And that one was one where you felt like, okay, if it's going to play out a little bit differently than from one of the other series that we've seen, this is where I thought, and Pensacola really blew a major opportunity here, because Pensacola obviously dealing with the attrition, the loss of Joseph Widmar, not having one of its best players out there on the ice. They give up an early goal at home to Jordan Ernst early in the first period. Dale Dion comes back, scores, and then 30 seconds later, they give up another goal. So they're down 2-1 at the end of the first. Ivan Bondarenko comes up with a huge goal early in the second, and then Steven Mundinger plays a great game to keep them out of the net. And Pensacola had chance after chance down the stretch, opportunities to win it on the power play, couldn't get it done. And then Caden Cahill kind of left all alone through the neutral zone and is able to get free on a breakaway. And that's one of the last guys that you want on Peoria's roster. I know that they have a ton of depth, but Caden Cahill is so speedy. He's got really good stick handling, and he's got a really good shot. I feel like Cahill is, and maybe it's hard to do this, but maybe it is the result of the fact that there are just so many good players on that team. But I feel like Cahill is kind of an underrated player in the SPHL. I think he's got good speed. He scored late in the overtime period, finished it off with a really nice finish to beat Mundinger and send Peoria back to Carver Arena with a 1-0 series lead. And you know, Mundinger, he did everything that he could to keep Pensacola in that game for as long as he did. And Latinovich had a really strong night in his own right. And there were a couple of bounces. There was one in particular I remember on the power play where Renat Dedejanov was, you know, trying to take away the screen, and a puck kind of hit him in the chest and fortunately bounced away from him, but right into Nick Latinovich, like right into the cradle of his left arm. And if that bounce had just kind of gone a little bit more to Dedejanov's right, it would have gone over Latinovich's left shoulder and right into the open net. So you kind of look at it, and that's kind of the benefit with Pensacola, is they have all these really nice replay angles down there at the Pensacola Bay Center. But a couple of times, Pensacola was so close to taking a 1-0 series lead, and Peoria just took all that momentum back on Saturday night and steamrolled their way to a 6-1 win in game two and a series sweep. So Peoria showing a lot of postseason success that they've had over the last couple of years. They're back in the semifinals once again after losing in the semifinals last year, winning the title the year before. This is a strong group of guys that has a lot of returning talent from last year. I believe it's 9 players from last year's semifinal squad that have returned this season. And obviously Alec Hageman, the high profile player that he is, that this is supposedly his last year. But a handful of really good players that have, you know, can come back and understand what it takes to make a deep playoff run. And so for Peoria, you grind it out, get a big game one on the road, and then you go and you feel like you just cruise in game two. And so now Peoria kind of looks at this with a really big opportunity. Yes, they have to start the series on the road, but you think, hey, you go win game one, we're kind of in a similar situation. We get to have an opportunity to close out twice on home ice. So the structure for that series will be Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. So if they do split on Wednesday and Friday, we'll get game three on Sunday. So now let's move on to the other half of the bracket. Let's go to the 3-6 matchup. You've got Roanoke and Quad City. I thought this was going to be a really intriguing series. I wish Cole Golka and Matt Ustaski could have played through all three games. But you know, we saw what makes Roanoke a championship caliber team, and that championship pedigree was on display. Roanoke, and this is not something we've seen from them really at all this season. They open up a 2-0 lead halfway through the first period. Logan Nelson gets a big goal late in the second, and then Leif Mattsson ties the game late in the third. And Hayden Holton gets the overtime winner early in the period after kind of a weird bounce that Quad City did a good job on the forecheck. They kept the puck around the net and were able to cash in on it after giving up so many shots in the first and second period. They gave up 30 shots in the first two periods, only 10 shots in the third period in overtime combined. So Quad City made some really good in-game adjustments. Dave Shinichny did a great job at managing his lineup, not having Golka and Ustaski out there on the ice. And Roanoke, they were, I believe it was 19-0 during the regular season when leading in the third period. So just a wild win for Quad City to get that on home ice. So you take, and they played that game on Tuesday. So you win on Tuesday in overtime. You get game one against the defending champs. Yes, you have to go on the road to the Berglund Center, which is a really tough place to play. But you get 3 days in between games one and two, and Quad City almost pulls this off. They score early in the game, give up a goal to Brendan Pepe. You score early in the second period, and then you're kind of just holding on for dear life. And I'm watching this game and thinking, okay, when's Roanoke going to strike? When's Roanoke going to strike? And Quad City continues to take penalties in the third period. Dylan Fournier gets called for the cross check at 12:35. And just as that penalty is about to expire, Steven Alvo scores from the perimeter. And then 31 seconds later, Alex DiCarlo gives Roanoke the lead. And just like that, suddenly Roanoke jumps out in front. They take the win 3-2. Quad City is unable to tie the game. And you just feel like all the momentum comes out of that. And you have to be thinking at the same time, okay, did Roanoke steal the momentum into game three, or did they have to empty the tank just to force a game three? Because we've kind of seen this go either way before. You know, back in 2013, Huntsville was the number 8 seed. They upset the number 1 seed Fayetteville in a pair of overtime games. They move on to the semifinals. They take on the number 2 seed Louisiana. Huntsville wins game one, loses game two in triple overtime. So Louisiana wins game two, 2-1. They have all the momentum. They've got game three in their barn, and they lose 5-1 to lose the series. So kind of had that effect of like, okay, well, we had to empty the tank just to get here. Now we've got nothing left for game three. And for Roanoke, it was the exact opposite. It was, we put it all on the line. We showed why we're the best third period team in the league this year. We go in, we win. You know, we don't give up leads in the third period. We know how to come from behind when we're trailing in the third period. And that's exactly what they did. Two huge goals. Roanoke was less than 6 minutes away from its season ending in the first round. And instead, it's moving on to the semifinals for the fourth consecutive postseason appearance that they've been in. Obviously, the Railyard Dogs were one of the teams that did not participate back in 2021. And then obviously 2020, there was no postseason due to COVID-19. But in 2019, they upset the number 1 seed Peoria in the challenge round, went to the finals in 2022, won the title in 2023. Now they're back in the semifinals in 2024. Quad City, I thought, had a really good year. And, you know, there's no guarantee that Quad City wins the series if Ustaski and Golka are out there on the ice. I'm sure Quad City would have loved to have had those guys. Those guys were great players. There's a lot of good things to take away from this season for Quad City when you look at the individual years of, on defense, Dylan Fournier. Trevor Moman, I thought, had maybe his strongest season as a pro. The addition of Patrick Marcinkiewicz provided a lot of highlights. I thought Mike Moran had another strong year. Whelan Parrish was a good addition. Alex Palmerville, I thought, was a good addition on the back end. And then you look at some of those mainstays, guys like Logan Nelson, and I mentioned Mike Moran, and you know, Tommy Seacoast continues to provide stability. But also just what you saw out of Mattson, Ustaski, and Golka this year. And then Brent Moran came along great late in the season. And so I just think for Quad City, you know, moving forward, you're kind of looking at this lineup thinking, man, we could really build off of this, because if it wasn't for the call-ups and the injuries that Quad City suffered, I thought they were a really good six seed. And I knew that that series was going to be physical. I knew it was going to be tough, but Roanoke kind of showed its depth and then flexed its muscle, being able to play on home ice and taking that momentum away as they steamrolled their way to a game three win, because there was really no doubt about it. And I kind of felt like that was going to happen, where, okay, you had the opportunity to win it late, you let it slip away. And, you know, so that one wasn't much as the same with Birmingham, because I thought Birmingham and Evansville game two was a little back and forth. Both teams had chances. Both goalies were phenomenal. Whereas game two with Quad City and Roanoke, Quad City has the lead. They can see the finish line, and then Roanoke kind of pulls the rug out from under Quad City, and the Storm just didn't recover and get up, and it was a 7-1 win in game three. So Roanoke is moving on to the semifinals, and it is very well earned. And so, you know, guys that are hungry for more, and, you know, lost some pieces along the way at times. You know, Nick Ford ultimately, you know, leaves to go play overseas. Marcin Kavix and Filion were gone for a while. They both came back. Marcin Kavix is still there, but Filion ends up, you know, opting to leave and not return. And so I thought he was a really good player for Roanoke this season when he was with the Railyard Dogs. But Dan Bremner's did a good job at reloading that team when they've had losses. And now Roanoke is suddenly looking like a team that is playing at a championship caliber level. And remember, if we get chalk, we've got a rematch between Roanoke and Peoria for the fourth straight postseason in which these two teams have participated in the playoffs. Fifth, I believe, because I believe Peoria eliminated Roanoke in 2018. So, and that would have been Roanoke's first playoff appearance, I think, in franchise history in the SPHL. I have to go back and check exactly, but I'm pretty sure Peoria and Roanoke had faced off against one another at least once before that upset in 2019. So now we're getting a bit of a playoff rivalry between two teams that don't meet each other a whole lot in the regular season. And speaking of which, Peoria and Pensacola, they've now met in three consecutive playoffs, all in the first round, and Peoria has won all three, the last two coming by way of a sweep. So Roanoke is moving on to the semifinals. They will take on Huntsville. Roanoke is headed to Huntsville, where the Havoc will be hosting game one on Wednesday, and then games two and three, if necessary, will be Friday and Saturday back at the Berglund Center. So for the higher seeded teams, Peoria and Roanoke, it is the same format in terms of game one on the road, games two and three at home, that they saw in the first round. So Roanoke used to starting on the road. They'll get a chance to do it again. Huntsville sweeps Fayetteville. I thought Huntsville was playing their best hockey going into the postseason. It looked like that team was starting to come together a little bit more. They've got a very young core. It is the seventh consecutive semifinal appearance for Huntsville. That is the longest active streak in the SPHL. And when you look at how they've gotten there too, they've kind of had really three different eras now when you really look at how they've gotten there, because in those early stages back in, you know, 2017-18, and when they won the back-to-back titles in 18 and 19, you know, you had the guys like Cy Nutkovich and Tyler Piacentini, but doing things up front. But really what really helped that team a lot was the structure of their defensive core and how much stability they had, because they had Nolan Kaiser, Peter Sekalis had been there for a while, Pat Condon had been there for a couple years. So they had these, you know, they had so much leadership from the back end that it made them such a tough team to compete against. And Huntsville, traditionally, especially during the last, you know, 7 or 8 years or so, they have been very, very sound defensively, and their goaltenders normally put up very solid numbers. And then in recent years, you saw Piacentini take a larger role, and you saw Nutkovich become one of the league's best players, and Rob Dara became so lethal as a shooter. And then they added Jacob Barber a couple years back and had him for a couple seasons. And, even getting some younger guys, like bringing in Tommy Munichello for a while and having Bauer Nordecker, and just continuing to find really good players that, you know, like last year, Nate Hudgen thought he was a great find and a great player. So there have been some really good pieces offensively for Huntsville. And now this year, with the transition to Stuart Stefan becoming the head coach, now there's Phil and Doug Elkstam and Dylan Stewart. And, you know, I think Jack Yonick's a really good depth piece, and Buster Larson, after, you know, him going up against his former team where he was in Fayetteville, and then he becomes one of Huntsville's best players. And I just thought, you look at, you know, and there were some mainstays. They had Jamie Bucel for a while before they ultimately parted ways with him. And then on the back end, Mason Palmer, Matt Duran are back. Kyle Clark's back. Cole Reginato's back. Robbie Fisher's back. But the guys that you see kind of highlighting the offense are all relatively new. And you look at a first-year head coach with a young lineup and a young core, and you think long-term, man, Huntsville's in really good shape. And they went in and really controlled the game defensively. Fayetteville tied it to create an opportunity in game one. Huntsville ultimately pulled away for a 3-1 win. And Mike Robinson, what a midseason acquisition he was, coming back from Nottingham, and he really shut down Fayetteville, which I think started to show that it had a high octane potential, because when Simon Boyko first came back, they were getting on a roll. They ended the regular season pretty well after, you know, looking like they were going to overcome that 10 game losing streak that they suffered through February, and just didn't get it going there in the postseason in that series against Huntsville. So the Havoc, their seventh consecutive semifinal appearance. They've got two titles in that span as well. So Huntsville, going to be a very tough series. And I think it's a good matchup both ways, where Huntsville, I think, believes that they can neutralize Roanoke's high-powered offense. I think Roanoke is confident that if they're in one of these gritty, grinded-out type physical series, I think they're confident that they're not going to back down. They're not going to get pushed around by Huntsville. I think on the other end, Peoria, it's an opponent that it has a lot of familiarity with, which sometimes in that case, that benefits the underdog. So Evansville is probably thinking, you know, what can Peoria throw at us that we didn't see during the regular season? You know, we believe in our goalie and Cole Ceci. Peoria is thinking, we've got the depth. We can get scoring from so many different guys. So I think we could see, you know, two tough-as-nails series that give us the opportunity where we could see just about any combination of championship series coming up after this upcoming weekend. So we'll see by the time we get to next Monday what we're looking at as far as the President's Cup Finals are concerned. So again, both series will start on Wednesday. Game two for each series will be on Friday. Game three for Huntsville-Roanoke will be Saturday. Game three for Evansville-Peoria would be Sunday. So by Sunday evening, we will have the answer at the latest of which two teams are moving on to the President's Cup Finals. So a lot of fun to be had. A couple of notes as well for Birmingham's loss to Evansville. It is the eighth time in SPHL history that in the 19th postseason in the league's history. This is the 20th season of the SPHL. Obviously, no playoffs in 2020 due to COVID. It's the eighth time that a number one seed has lost its opening playoff series. It's the seventh time that it's happened in the first round. So it kind of depends on if you count 2005. The Knoxville Ice Bears were the number one seed. Six teams made the playoffs. They gave the top two seeds a first round bye. And then Knoxville lost its semifinal series after the first round was completed. So it kind of depends on how you quantify it or not. There have been a few years where they've had a 16 postseason. They've kind of formatted in different ways. In 2015, they had all six teams play in the first round, and then the highest remaining seed got an automatic berth to the finals. So the top three seeds actually all lost that year. So it was the four seed Mississippi that got an automatic berth to the finals. Knoxville and Louisiana played the semifinal series. Knoxville won, went on to face Mississippi, and then swept the River Kings to win the 2015 President's Cup. So they've kind of done it in different ways. I've seen a little bit of debate on this about, you know, should the league, you know, at 8 out of 10 teams making it, should the league consolidate the, you know, the postseason for longer series instead of, you know, and have fewer teams instead, so you can have more best of 5, best of 7 game series. You know, as long as I've been in the league, it's always been, you know, best of three, and then the finals is sometimes a best of five, sometimes a best of three. Lately, it's been a best of five pretty consistently. But I don't know about the decision-making process that went into it. Obviously, when you have a best of seven series, you're talking about these series sometimes stretching as long as 2 weeks. And part of it, you know, comes down to the buildings that teams play in. I wouldn't want to move to a six-team playoff because I don't, when you look at other major sports that have a series-type playoff format, I don't think my main thoughts on it, like as far as, okay, we'll go back to four teams and do best of seven or best of five and then best of seven, whatever, you know, that's up for debate with the league office, but I wouldn't move to six teams and then give teams first-round buys or second-round buys. And the reason why is because when you're basing it off a series, you think about how superstitious and how routine hockey players, you know, we joke about them being superstitious and going off their routine all the time. You spend 6-7 months playing 2 to 3 games a week, and then suddenly you grind it out and you're the first place team after a 56 game season. And then suddenly your routine's thrown off because now you have nearly a week and a half to 2 full weeks without playing at all. And it almost kind of is a disservice to that number one team, I would think, in that situation to then sit and not have game action while one of the two teams that you'll play against are getting reps of things that they can kind of go through. They're getting, you know, they're staying in game action, they're staying in game shape, and you now have to try to simulate and emulate the game experience for your team. So I wouldn't want to go to six teams specifically, just because whether you do it in the first round or you let, like what they did in 2015, you let a Mississippi go on straight to the finals. I just don't think a series-type postseason should include buys. That's why the NHL has an even 16 teams. That's why the NBA has an even, you know, 16 teams outside the play-in tournament. But again, the play-in tournament is just, you know, a couple of games. And you have a long enough series that it may not make that total impact. Like, if, you know, these three-game series are so tough, if they were to switch to six teams and keep it at a three-game series, then suddenly you go without playing games for a week and a half to 2 weeks, and then suddenly you come back after that break, you have two bad games, now your season's over. So I wouldn't think it's necessary. That's not necessarily the biggest justice to, in this situation, a team like Birmingham or Peoria that maintain being the best team. And so obviously, you know, on the contrary to what I was saying before, 8 times has a number one seed lost its opening playoff series, 7 times in the first round. Well, only 6 times has the number one seed actually gone on to win the cup, and it hasn't happened since 2017. So you kind of look how that plays out. And granted, it's not like the number one seed is always a far and above favorite to win the entire thing, because, you know, I said it on last week's edition of the podcast, I think you legitimately have 4 or 5 championship contenders with 6 teams that had shown a lot of potential, but I didn't think there was any reason that Pensacola or Evansville couldn't knock off an upset. There was kind of a case for and against all 8 teams. But it's not like, you know, kind of looking at it, I thought Birmingham, maybe they weren't playing their best hockey at the end of the regular season. Obviously they had that loss to Macon, didn't play well in that series with the Mayhem a couple of weeks before the regular season ended. You know, Evansville got to see them right at the end of the regular season, so kind of got a preview of what they'd expect to see in the postseason. So the matchup, I didn't think, was the most advantageous for a number one seed. I thought Peoria and Roanoke were playing as well as anybody. I thought Fayetteville and Quad had a ton of offensive firepower. I thought Huntsville had shown that it has great structure and good goaltending. And then for, you know, Pensacola and Evansville, you know, with Pensacola, they kind of had good top-line offense, and they had good speed on the perimeter that could be utilized as a weapon. Mundinger was playing better hockey through March. And then with Evansville, you know, Cole Ceci essentially just stole the series, and they were starting to get scoring from more pieces around their lineup. So I think for, you know, looking at those top-tier teams, especially the ones at the top of the standings, you know, it wasn't going to be guaranteed that Birmingham was necessarily going to waltz its way through the finals, just because of how many good teams there were. And so when teams are thinking, oh, I don't want to face this team in the first round or this team in the first round, look, you're probably going to have to face one of those teams you want to avoid in the semifinals, if not the championship round, because this is a really deep year. I think this is a really good year parity-wise in the SPHL. And obviously that gets proven a little bit when the number one seed goes down and the defending champ and number three seed gets taken to the brink in the first two games. But I think you also saw ultimately the better teams, the easily superior teams in three of these four series move on with blowout wins, closing out three of the four series. And then I think you saw a team in Evansville that just played a really complete three-game week against the team that had the best regular season in the league this year. So I think you got four quality teams in the semifinals that are all playing really good hockey right now. And so while on paper, maybe some of these matchups don't jump off the page because two of the top four teams lost in the first round, I think it shows the way that these teams are playing on the ice in this moment gives us a really good product to look forward to. But kind of going back to the discussion about changing the playoff format, if the league decides to cut the postseason, I don't see them going in that route because I think more teams and more fan bases want to be able to participate in the postseason. But if it stays at eight teams, I don't think you're going to see them extend to five or seven games in the earlier rounds just because the number of games, building availability. Huntsville's having to play their semifinal series at the Huntsville Ice Sports Center again, their practice facility, which is where they had to host their first round playoff game. So, it's unfortunate for fans because the capacity is a lot less, especially given the, given the attendance year that Huntsville had. At least that's what I was told, by the way, that they were going to have to play at the second round. And that was the case as announced by the league that game one on Wednesday is going to be at the Ice Sports Center. So it's unfortunate for Huntsville fans, but that's kind of some of the conflict that some of these teams have to face when we get into the postseason, because those games aren't locked in on the schedule in advance like the regular season games are. And so practice facilities have to get used a little bit more and more. Peoria's had to do it. Evansville's had to do it. Huntsville's had to do it all in recent years. So it's just kind of, in 2015, Mississippi had to play the entire championship series at the Knoxville Civic Coliseum because the Lander Center was not available throughout the entire duration of the series. So, it's just unfortunate when stuff like that happens, but I don't necessarily foresee the playoff format changing. Doesn't mean it won't happen, but that's just kind of my thought on the idea of changing it. I just don't want to see six teams. Like if the league decides, okay, we're going to go four teams, but it's going to be a best of seven series in both rounds. Okay, that's a decision for the league to make. I just don't want to see six series because I don't want to see a team have to stop playing cold turkey in a sport where you're used to playing multiple games every week. It doesn't work the same way as like the NFL where you're used to having a bye week and then you get a first round bye and you have the opportunity to rest and then it's just one game. So, obviously sometimes that backfires and sometimes it's a benefit, but in this case, obviously being the number one seed didn't do Birmingham a ton of postseason success, but still a phenomenal season for that team. And going back to Fayetteville, didn't really touch on this, but I think it was a really strong first year for Ryan Crothers. He recruited exceptionally well. I thought there were individual players that had a great season. If he continues to keep his core together and can build on that and have another strong recruiting summer like he did last year, I think a lot of teams have to feel like, Fayetteville and Huntsville might be kind of in the same boat. The optics look better for Huntsville because they won a playoff series this year. But for Fayetteville, I think they're in a similar situation as Huntsville is, where you feel really good about what your first year head coach did to help get that team to a top four finish and home ice advantage in the first round of the playoffs. Obviously, they would have liked to have been in the semifinals this week, but I think more positives than negatives coming out for Ryan Crothers in his first season at the helm of the Marksmen. So appreciate everybody for listening to this edition of the Knoxville Ice Bears podcast. Always appreciate everybody for tuning in. Again, I'm Joel Silverberg. The semifinals start Wednesday night, Peoria at Evansville on Wednesday at 8:00 Eastern time. And then Roanoke is at Huntsville at 8:30 Eastern on Wednesday night as well. We'll talk to you next week. We'll have a championship series to preview. And before we go, do want to wish a congratulations to Birmingham's Ray Pack. He was named the SPHL Equipment Manager of the Year. It's his second time earning the honor. He's been in pro hockey for a long time. He's been in Birmingham a long time, was with the Bulls during their ECHL tenure, and he's been in the SPHL as well. But it's his second honor as the SPHL Equipment Manager of the Year. And then a congratulations to Fayetteville's Kyle Sherrill and Huntsville's Cody Miller, the co-recipients of the Athletic Trainer of the Year Award. So congratulations to those three on their honors. More awards are going to be announced throughout the course this week for staff members, for players, for coaches. So stay tuned in to see if somebody from the team you cheer for was honored in the next couple of weeks. Again, I'm Joel Silverberg. We will preview the finals next week right here on the Knoxville Ice Bears podcast.